Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I'm former double agent and Newsweek editor-at-large, Naveed Jamali, and you're listening to Declassified, brought to you by Newsweek. Declassified is an exploration of what it means to be secure and of the people all over the world who are quietly working to keep us safe. In my career in the intelligence community, I served as a double agent and as an intelligence officer. My goal is to help explain the things that you can see, the proverbial iceberg above the waterline, and let you know what is below it.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
On the night of September 4th, 1942, the USS Gregory was patrolling the South Pacific, just off the Solomon Islands. The Gregory and the US Little, her sister ship, came under fire by Japanese destroyers in the middle of the night. Within minutes, the Gregory was sinking. Only a handful of sailors were uninjured. And of those sailors, it was one in particular who became enshrined in naval history as a hero. 22-year-old Charles French was a mess attendant. As a black man, it was one of the only positions available to him in the Navy. At the time, black and white people weren't even permitted to swim together. But it was Charles French who jumped into shark-infested waters and began to swim around, gathering his injured shipmates onto a raft. And then he tied a rope around his waist, got back in the water, and dragged the raft with 15 sailors on it, through the dark ocean until they were rescued at sunrise. In May of 2022, Petty Officer French was honored posthumously with a Navy and Marine Corps Medal for heroism, and with a Naval Aviation School's Command Training Pool in San Diego that now bears his name. It's an amazing story of bravery, of brotherhood, of a changing military that's hard to oversell. And Rear Admiral Charles Brown, the Navy's Chief of Information, agrees, and he tells a lot of amazing stories as part of his work. He joined us to talk about not only Petty Officer French's new namesake, but also the challenges of his work bridging the gap between the military community and the Wild West of social media. So let's start with Petty Officer French. Now, it's a remarkable story of a man who really, he swam for 2 hours, towing a line, saving his shipmates. He was also a black sailor living in a time in the Second World War where what sailors could do was limited. And it's fascinating to me that the Navy is honoring him and continue to honor him. But the burning question I had, besides, his heroism, which is, of course, without doubt, why is it important that the Navy did this now? Why is it important that they continue the sort of the heritage of, in this case, naming a pool? Why is it important? What's the relevance here for continuing on something to recognize something that happened, in the Second World War?
Well, I'd say, Naveed, the short answer is it is a part of our heritage. It's a part of who we are. The truth is, the unfortunate truth is, there's a lot of stories out there that we'll never know. stories of heroism and bravery, like Petty Officer French, that that we just, it's lost to history, many of those stories. And so when we have the opportunity to properly recognize someone like Petty Officer French, who, contemporaneously at the time did receive some recognition, some limited recognition, but certainly, was due more recognition. When we have the opportunity to give him the recognition that he's due and others like him, it's important we do it. We have to honor our past. It is certainly something that reflects our core values then in World War II, honor, courage, and commitment, and the core values that our sailors still have today. And so nothing could be more important, honestly, Naveed, than holding up an example like Petty Officer French, who, despite incredible odds and circumstances, really shined in that moment, put his shipmates before himself, at danger to himself, and really serves as an example to all of us today of what the Navy is about.
And, it strikes me that we're talking about heroism that occurred in the Second World War, that occurred in many cases, well before many of perhaps the parents of people who are joining the Navy today were even born. Why is, you talk about heritage, and clearly it's important to balance the history of the Navy and history of the military and history of the United States. But we also acknowledge significant changes. We have a Black Secretary of Defense. We have things that clearly when Petty Officer French was in the service have changed dramatically. How do you see the Navy balancing this? And in terms of messaging to those who are looking to join, to the new crop of sailors who are coming in, and to the general public, what is the balance between heritage and progress?
Wow. Well, I think heritage should be an inherent part of progress. We certainly always want to move forward. And I think the recognition of Petty Officer French, who, at the time as a Black American was discriminated against. I mean, it was part of everyday life in America, where segregation was a fact, including in the military. And so Petty Officer French was limited in what jobs he could have and how he could serve his country, just like his fellow Black Americans were during World War II and until Truman desegregated the military in 1947. So, that is part of who we were, but we're always improving and getting better, both as a country and certainly as a Navy. And so that is what progress is about. And sometimes that progress allows us to look back at our history and identify, people who were not recognized to the extent that they should have been for acts of heroism and bravery.
And fast forwarding to the present day, when I think about French and I think about our adversaries, the thing that always strikes me is our adversaries, the makeup of their military is homogeneous, right? The Chinese, the Iranians, certainly the Russians. We don't have that. We have diversity. And, I wonder what do you think our adversaries, when they see us celebrating, someone who came from a minority class or from, what do you think that they take that as? Because clearly that's, that is not something that they do. And look, of course, it's important to acknowledge the bravery and the heritage. But, for adversaries, what do you think they look at and see with this? What do they take away from it?
That's a good question, Naveed. I don't know that when we make decisions based on what's morally right, what we see as right, I don't know that it goes into the calculus all the time, what our adversaries may or may not take away from it. What we know is that more diverse teams are more successful. Frankly, we had a more diverse military during World War II than many of our adversaries did. And throughout our country's history, we've had diversity. We have improved upon that diversity and how we practice that diversity throughout our country's history. But that diversity has been a part of our nation since its founding. And so, as we become a more perfect union, our diversity leads to greater success. And that's certainly true in the military. Our adversaries, I would hope would always take the message that today's not the day to test our military. The heroism that we have, in every rank, in every race, in every gender, and in every ethnicity that's present in the U.S. military and certainly in the U.S. Navy only makes us stronger.
Well, I mean, the bravery that Petty Officer Friend showed, probably in his pinky, probably I would like to think would give the Iranians, the Chinese, and Russians pause. But clearly, it was forefront. I think when you were at the ceremony, you met some of the descendants from Petty Officer French, as well as some of the people that were family of the sailors he signed.
I did. So we had family of Petty Officer French. His extended family, nephews, and their children and grandchildren were with us. It was really moving to have the opportunity to meet them. Clearly, they have known this story, and they have held fast in their belief that Petty Officer French was due greater recognition for his acts. And I was just so proud and honored to have an opportunity to meet them, to shake their hands, and to help them celebrate, Petty Officer French and all that he represents. They were certainly, I think, happy to have the recognition there. The event was the renaming of a rescue swimmer training pool there in San Diego, which is where Petty Officer French was laid to rest at Fort Rosecrans there. And so that training pool is used for sailors who serve aboard Navy ships today, who serve as rescue swimmers in case of an emergency or in case of need to rescue someone from the water. And all of those sailors who train in San Diego will now train in a pool that bears Petty Officer Charles French's name. I think that means a lot to the family. And it meant a lot to me just to be able to share that with them.
It sounds like an incredibly fitting tribute to Petty Officer French. And you talk about the young sailors who are going to go through that pool and through that school, and they'll learn clearly the history behind it. But this brings me to a question about the next generation for you. You're in the information business, and when I see a lot of the young members of the military, I'm always impressed, of course, but also I'm a dinosaur here. I remember when I first got email, like that was a big deal, and using AOL, dial up. The times have changed. A lot of the military is either on various social media platforms. I feel like the younger generation is even far more, civically active than I was at their age, frankly. What do you say to someone who, and it seems like the military has sort of shifted in terms of its approach to social media, and it's much more of an outreach. But what do you say to those who question whether, the military, that you need to reach younger generations by using these platforms? Is there concern? Is this a strategy moving forward?
Naveed, I'll tell you the first concern I have with your question is you describing yourself as a dinosaur. I don't know what that makes me, whatever it was that came before the dinosaurs. So I do think, social media is just a part of the fabric of our life. It's how we communicate with each other. Going back to the early 1900s and the advent of radio and public communication using radio, and then into film in between the wars and television, all throughout that, the military and I'm especially proud of the Navy's history in using those media to communicate with the public. I think social media is just, kind of the next evolution of that. And it's certainly something that we need to understand, better, as it evolves, and it evolves very quickly, our understanding of it has to evolve. But, it's just simply part of our life and part of our society, and we have to acknowledge that. That said, there are important lessons we need to learn and relearn about the use of social media, in our kind of competitive communication environment. Why? Talk about the competitive communication environment. I'm not just talking about competing with, other services, recruits, or competing at the box office with Top Gun blowing everyone away this weekend. I'm talking about the competition we face from some of those potential adversaries. And there's an aspect of social media that allows the proliferation of things like disinformation and misinformation. Which has always been a part of the public communication sphere that we operate in, but those technologies allow for a misinformation, disinformation to proliferate just much more quickly and more broadly. And so we need to understand that and recognize that there's an element of forced protection, that goes along with social media. And a lot of people, when you think about how we play defense on social media, we think about operational security and guarding what information we share. And that's certainly important. I mean, we always want to make sure that our sailors and our families and our organizations aren't sharing information that can, put our people at risk or put our operations at risk. But also, beyond that, there's also the idea of the information that our sailors consume and our organizations consume. And we've seen that misinformation and disinformation, can be targeted at our people, and we need to make sure we're, providing them the training and things like media literacy and social media literacy, where they can, protect themselves and protect each other from being, subject to misinformation and disinformation.
Wow, I mean, it's so prophetic, and there's a lot to unpack there. To me, it strikes me when I think about, you're right, disinformation, misinformation. Those are always the big ones that people want to talk about. But there's a positive, as you've said, to this, right? I'm shocked, or I shouldn't say shocked. I'm always pleasantly surprised how, and we actually did some reporting on this on some of the, the militaries. I think we included you, some of the funnier and more social media savvy DOD Twitter accounts. And it sounds like, for a lot of people who are used to this world, it sounds like, why wouldn't they be on Twitter or Snapchat? That's where people are. So why wouldn't you go there? But it is a pretty big step, I think, right? And it is an acknowledgement, while the messaging hasn't changed, the way that we communicate has, right? So when we talk about, for you to get out messaging, I mean, there's clearly, I've seen numerous, I can only imagine how many you've written press releases. What is the difference and the ability to reach people, not just from a disinformation or to counter disinformation, but just to let the average American citizen know what the Navy is doing, or to speak to, the average citizen? Is there, or not even just the American citizen, right? Because this is a global thing. What is the right way? I mean, and is there, can you explain a little bit about the power here of sort of social media, of video, of things of that nature for the DOD and for the Navy specifically, in terms of, getting
extra? Yeah, sure. I think what it's all about, Naveed, is connecting the American people with their Navy. The truth is that, it's not just about reaching people who we're trying to recruit. It's about making sure that the American people who, we represent, who invest in our Navy, who deserve the protection and the understanding of what a Navy's value is to the country, that those American folks are connected to their Navy. We have this technology that allows our sailors who, in the past, when we set to sea and went overseas over the horizon, it was very hard for us to share what we do every day with people back home. And these technologies give us that ability, and gives us a great ability to connect connect people with their Navy. You know, people will ask, well, how many, you know, professional communicators, how many public communicators do we have in the Navy? The public affairs team in the Navy is relatively small, especially relative to the other services. There's only about 200 PAOs, public affairs officers in the Navy, you know, in an organization that has about 330,000 people, you know, on active duty in uniform. Only 200 of them whose job it is, you know, for public affairs dedicated. And then we have about 1,000 mass communication specialists, enlisted sailors who, you know, take photos and write stories and you know, post press releases and you know, build websites and things like that. Still a relatively small number. But when people ask me how many public communicators we have in the Navy, it's 330,000. Every sailor wearing a uniform communicates to the public in one way or another, whether they're active on social media or not. And most are. I mean, the average age of our sailors is pretty young. You know, it's early 20s. So generally, they're probably on social media. They're probably talking to their friends and family about what they do. You know, and social media gives them the platform to do it in a global way. You know, I want to empower those sailors, you know, in the right way to share information and to help, you know, connect Americans to what they do. You know, generally, when you go to a ship, when you visit a Navy ship at sea, the thing that always strikes people is, you know, it's not the aircraft moving across the flight deck. It's not the great big gray, you know, piece of metal moving through the sea. It's the people. You know, you talk to the people, you talk to these young men and women who have incredible responsibilities at a very young age. They're very proud of what they do, and they want to share what they do with the American people. And so, you know, I see my job and you know, the public affairs officer, you know, team's job as helping to empower those sailors to share their story in a way that's meaningful, again, in a way that's safe, in a way that doesn't compromise our operational security, of course, but in a way that the American people get a better understanding of the value of a Navy.
Well, you know, if we bring it back to Petty Officer French, I can only imagine just even, you know, theater commanders, all these speaking to the president took, you know, took days, if that. And now we're talking about, you know, a very junior sailor being able to communicate back almost real time. And I think it's changed the flow of the news cycle and how things are reported and how the expectation the public has on seeing things. So clearly, I guess you would say, it's better to be here and be, you know, and as opposed to creating a void, right? So being in social media for the military, for the Navy, is important because it seems that as a society, that's what we expect, right? We expect to be able to see if something happens or just to learn what's going on. Where do you go? You go to social media to look at, you know, a Facebook page or, you know, TikTok or Twitter, right? I mean, that seems the general expectation. So in his basic sense, Admiral, is that expectation driving expectation by the public that this is how, and look, in many cases, they circumvent, you know, traditional media. They'll go right to you guys on your social media presence. Is that an expectation that you guys are, you know, addressing or moving to? Is that the sort of part of the gravitas of why you guys?
Well, I don't think it's just the Navy or just the military. I think any organization today, you know, understands that these conversations are happening, whether you are part of them or not. And generally, if you want to build a relationship with the American people in our case, again, you know, helping them to understand why they have a Navy, why they've invested in the Navy and what value the Navy provides them, you know, what we are doing on their behalf. If we want to have that relationship, we have to be a part of those conversations. And so the way to do that is to be where they are. You know, not all social media is created equal. Of course, there's different, you know, approaches and different kind of mini cultures within each social media platform about, you know, what the accepted kind of protocols and norms and standards are. As you know, in the U.S. government and U.S. military, you know, we have restrictions against using, a platform like TikTok, which is, owned by a Chinese company, which has ties to the Chinese government. You know, we have restrictions against using that. And I think that's part of the social media literacy conversation we need to have, you know, is understanding the platforms that you're using, understanding the spaces that you are, and how these algorithms are, you know, affecting what you see and what you share. We certainly have those conversations about, you know, in our own homes with our kids, with our family and friends, you know, and you see those conversations in news coverage of social media, about how those algorithms affect content and the sharing of content. And so, I always try to make the point that when it comes to TikTok, you know, I'm very wary of using that and encouraging our sailors to use that because of the ties to the Chinese government. The restrictions against using, you know, TikTok on, you know, government provided phones and things like that, set aside, the data collection concerns set aside. I have concerns about, how an organization sets up those algorithms to kind of influence the content that's seen.
You know, social media and social media literacy, it's an important thing. Not all social media platforms are created equal, right? I think a lot of people, regardless whether they're in the military, regardless whether they're in the United States, they don't realize what happens with their data, what's happening with an app that they put on their phone, what it could allow someone access to, so on and so forth. These are not things that I think the average user is concerned about. And I think, you know, you bring up a really interesting point that there's always going to be a gravitas for, people moving towards platforms that are becoming popular. And one of the dangers, of course, is that unintentionally, just by virtue of signing on to a particular platform, you could potentially be opening yourself up to collection, right? I mean, I don't want to say compromise, but you know, you could be sharing information with you with a potential adversary, unbeknownst to you. So how do we balance with young people before they come into the military? Clearly, many of them are going to be on all sorts of social media platforms. They come into the military. What is the expectation of, hey, this is part of your life, this is part of how you communicate with people? What is the balance there with, again, you know, security and just security concerns?
Yeah, I really think, Naveed, it's about education, you know, and it's about making sure that people understand the tools that they're using and how the information they share may be used. There is certainly, it's not limited to social media. It's really any kind of data you share. You have to be aware that once you share it, you lose control over that. And, it may be shared further without your knowledge. And so understanding that and being conscious of it is really the key to, I think, operating securely and setting up those boundaries that you want to with your data, with the content you share. I mean, heck, with the information you share. I mean, something as simple as, you know, telling sailors, hey, when you're going on vacation, you know, you don't necessarily want to advertise that on social media that you're going to be away from your home, not because it's some, you know, great operational security threat, but because you don't want anyone, you know, breaking in and robbing you when you're not home. You know, you don't want to tip people off that you're not going to be there to watch your stuff. I mean, that's something that doesn't just apply to the military. That's kind of common sense. And having those kind of conversations with sailors and with the people who are representing the Navy on social media accounts is really important.
Thanks once again to Rear Admiral Charles Brown. He'll be retiring later this summer, so we thank him for his service and wish him well and all the best on his next adventure. And a reminder, if you like Declassified, you should check out my latest project with Newsweek. It's called Unconventional, and the first episode is an amazing exploration of what exactly military aircraft are doing when they fly in American skies.
It's nighttime here on the flight line, yet the work continues on, and this space is a 24-hour operation. There are people here that are working late into the night to make sure that these helicopters can fly and fly safe.
Even though we're not in a combat zone, they treat every flight like there is that level of intensity.
You got blood all over here.
My nose just started bleeding in the middle of us flying. It's the concussion of the 50
count. I totally get it.
Take flight with us and find Unconventional now at youtube.com/newsweek.